Okay, so I guess we're about ready to start here. Seems like there was some voice in here, they had a mistake. Carlos has fixed the hum. Yes, we can go on here. Last day we looked at this analog switch. Now some of you guys might have missed out on the hum. You can kind of see how this works. Either one side is on really good or the other side is on really good, depending on what the polarity of, you know, the voltage Vn is. And there is one little kind of a not so nice thing about this switch, and that is that you have to have V control and V control not. And if you go through an inverter to get V control not from V control, there's actually a time delay in there, right? So there's a little bit of a thing, which may or may not be a problem, depends on how fast your inverter is. But that's something you need to be aware of. What I'd like to do now is show you just how you'd use this thing with in a logic circuit. This was for an analog switch. And the logic circuit basically looks the same. You just use logic levels on it, so I don't know, maybe I'll turn it upside down kind of this time. This is V control, not, I guess, is what I did on the top one, and that's the NRP channel. And this goes up to V channel, will go to ground, I guess, and the N channel. This will go to V control. And this guy, the N channel like that, this goes to VCC or VDD, I guess they'd call it. I guess since this is a MOS thing, VDD. And so it works basically the same way, except it works from 0 to VDD, right? And ways you might use this, uses for this are, you can make dynamic RAM from this.
How would this?
Well, basically this is a switch, right?
Okay.
So you can have a switch going to a capacitor, okay? And so, you know, you switch this thing down to charge up the capacitor or to thing, and then over here you've got a switch to read the capacitor. This is to read, and this is to refresh. Okay, and you know, dynamic RAM, you got to refresh it all the time, you know, and just keep. So that's an idea for dynamic RAM. Then you can use this for. You could use this for logic gates, because you can do logic and switches, right? And so you could put, like, say, for example, you could have two switches hooked together like this. And suppose I put A here, A there. And then if I control this guy and this guy with B, right? Then you would get, when A and B are on, you'll get something over here. So this would be like A, B, is that right? And if either A or B is not on, I guess I don't even need, I just need one switch, right? Well, no, I need, let's see.
When A is on.
I gotta make it go to zero somehow. How are we gonna make it go to zero? So this will be A and B not, right? So I need, if I put in here B not, right? So this guy closes and put this to ground here, right? Is that what we're thinking? But anyway, you know, you can think about it, and there's ways you can use switches to make logic, okay? So, and also, you know, we use switches for a lot of different things in computers, you know, like for example in assembly language programming, if you were in there, you remember they had a thing called the bus bar, right? You know, that thing that would switch the output pins to various different things, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, bus bar switches or just, you know, whatever you want. Switches are just kind of handy. I mean, you know, they're just. So, you know, you can use the same analog switch that we had over here for doing digital stuff. And I think that's about all I want to say about digital stuff. Chapter 6. Are there any questions about Chapter 6? So. I think, you know, when you look at Chapter 6, it gives you kind of the electronics background for what's going on inside a lot of digital circuitry. But nowadays, when you, unless you're actually involved designing the chip, which, you know, in some cases you are, and in many cases when you're doing that, they give you a certain set of components, you know, a certain design process you're supposed to use. And then, you know, of course, nowadays all the tools are as automated as you might imagine. And, you know, you don't end up really thinking too much about those kind of things that are, you know, in there. Now, you do possibly end up thinking about them, I guess, if, you know, in some cases on board level designs and when you're using, you know, interfacing one IC to another IC, there's a little bit of that that you need to think about. But often you don't even think about those kind of things. But you always kind of need to know what's inside there and what's kind of going on, so it helps. The things that we gained from this was there, in order to keep the power dissipation down, you want to use all switches, no resistors, and these complementary metal oxide semiconductor devices, you know, P-channel and N-channel MOSFETs, enhancement mode MOSFETs work very well for that kind of thing. And you can even make nice analog switches that go from one rail to the other. And, you know, these switches are used for a lot of things. I mean, even the digital switches, they have, you know, switches that, you know, basically they're digital switches like this. You can buy them and, you know, 8 of them in a package or whatever. But, you know, those are used for things like, there's in a radio, there's a thing called a mixer, and a mixer basically is a switching kind of action. You have a local oscillator, and it basically chops the waveform at a certain frequency, which actually moves the frequency of the input waveform one way or the other, actually both ways simultaneously. And those switches are really handy for that kind of thing. Switches are handy in sample and hold circuitry, which is used in analog to digital converters. And so, you know, switches are just very nice, especially ones that are controlled by, you know, voltages like this. So now you know how to build your own, but you also should know that you can just, you know, buy them in packages if you like. All made for your convenience. Okay, so the next topic we want to talk about is IC amplifier design. So remember at the beginning of the class, I promised you that at the end of the class, you would know how to design an op amp, right? So now you've built some cool stuff with op amps. Well, now it would be nice if you knew how to make an op amp. So then you know everything, you know, kind of from the ground up more. So that's what we're going to look at today. And, you know, this is an important topic because, you know, some of my students in the past have gone into IC design. You know, there's some of the people we go and see sometimes in senior trip in Portland. You know, those guys, I remember, you know, when they were taking electronics, you know, they became very expert at doing some very fast, you know, gigahertz type amplifiers, you know, and ICs. And actually doing the circuit in an integrated circuit can give you some advantages as far as frequency response because everything is very small. You know, it's the same idea when we went to surface mount from doing things on the breadboard, and all those parasitics get to be smaller. And if you go to you know, an integrated circuit that's even smaller, you know, it's even better in that regard. So there are some advantages to putting things in integrated circuits, but at least at this time, I haven't seen a cheap way to do that. You know, I mean, they've come up with, if you make an integrated circuit, by the time you get yourself all set up to make them, you know, you can make them really cheaply, but to get there is a lot of work. So usually, you know, most applications type engineers actually use the integrated circuits and don't design them, but you know, somebody has to design them, and, you know, like I said, some of my former students have done that, and so it's nice to know what's inside there, even if you don't end up designing them. So, the first thing you need to know are the limitations of an integrated circuit, and those limitations are basically space, okay? It all comes down to how much space does a component take? And, you know, you've looked at some components. There's some pretty big ones you've got on your breadboard there that are actually bigger than a whole integrated circuit, you know, a lot, many times bigger than an integrated circuit would be. And so, you know, you can't put those big things on there. You can't put one of those 470 microfarad capacitors on an integrated circuit. So, you know, let's look at limitations here. Of IC, okay, and maybe we'd say versus discrete design. Okay, now a discrete design is one, you know, where you put it on a circuit board or whatever. An IC design is where you put the whole thing on an IC. So capacitors, you can do like, you know, 1 picofarad. To about 100 picofarads in IC. This would be IC over here. This would be discrete over here. And in discrete, you know, you can go from 1 picofarad up to, you know, even up to a farad, okay? You can buy farad capacitors or, you know, about like this. Little things. We've actually got some upstairs if you want to play with them. Kind of fun. and charge them up, and they, you know, hold their charge for a while. And, you know, they'd be a little battery almost. But, you know, you can't have big capacitors because, well, you know, a capacitance is proportional to the area of the plates, right? Make the area bigger, makes the capacitor bigger. And, of course, we can't use big areas. And, you know, when you're using, even 100 picofarads, you know, that could use a fair amount of your IC. So what about resistors? Resistors is another thing that we need to use a lot of. And so, you know, we can go from basically 0 ohms to about, well, you could do it as much as 100 kiloohms, okay? But resistors, remember, resistors are also, what are they? Like L over sigma A, right? And so when you have a big resistor, and you see a big resistor on an IC, it's going snaking back and forth, back and forth, back and forth like this. And so 100K is really kind of stretching it, okay? You wouldn't really want to do 100K. You'd have to be kind of desperate to do 100K, okay? And over here, of course, you know, you can go from 0 ohms up to, maybe 10 megohms or something. People go up higher than that. But once you get up really high, then you have to worry about contamination and other kinds of things, like on your circuit board. I've read guys that are, you know, making these really, they need really high impedance on their circuit board between one trace and another. And, you know, if somebody in the process the circuit board goes through, you know, uses a certain chemical or something, then it's all toast. So you can have, you know, pretty good range over here, not so much range over here, for the same reason you're using up too much area. Now, I guess what else do we use? So we use resistors, capacitors, inductors, right? Inductors. Maybe I'll just say L, huh? You guys all know we use L for inductors, right? L. So you could go from 0 henries up to about, in this case, none. Not practical, not really practical. There are a few integrated circuits that actually have an inductor on them, but they're very few. So not practical. And over here you can go from, you know, 0 up to about, you know, maybe 1,000 millihenries or something. 1,000 microhenries. About a millihenry or something. I mean, you can go higher. You can go pretty big. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to say 1 millihenry. But you could go higher than that. But it takes up more space, right? Yeah. You're probably not going to put a 1 henry inductor on a circuit board because it would be too heavy to hold. The circuit board wouldn't hold it well. You know. Transistors, right? Let's see, transistors. So, on an IC, generally an IC has a certain process that they go through, and there are some ICs today which have a mix of types of transistors. But usually when you're doing an IC, they give you like one type of transistors, like they're doing MOSFETs or something, right? And so you can do MOSFETs, but you can't do a JFET or a BJT or whatever, or it's a BJ, you know, bipolar IC, and you get, you know, diodes and BJTs and that kind of stuff and whatnot. But So you can use lots of them, lots of the same type, same general type. And over here, you can't use lots of them. I mean, you know, you're not going to put a million transistors on a circuit board and a million discretes. You're not going to do that. Well, you could do that with an IC, right? So I'm going to say few, but large variety, but a variety is fine. So over here, you know, you can have lots of them, but they need to be similar, you know, like maybe N and P channel MOSFETs or enhancement mode MOSFETs kind of thing. And, you know, there are ICs that have more variation here, but that makes the IC more expensive. And it's kind of like, you know, the same way as using up, you know, having a big resistor makes a IC more expensive. Or having a big resistor basically means you don't have very many other components you can put on there. Okay, so let's think, what other kinds of components do they have? You can't do quartz crystals on an IC. Quartz crystals are used, they're actually, quartz has an effect called the piezoelectric effect. It's, you know, rock. You've heard of quartz, you know, like, you know, you go hiking and you'll see that out in the, you know, in the mountains there when you're rock climbing or whatever. You know, quartz is it's a crystal, it's a rock. And what happens is if you squeeze that rock, it's really hard to squeeze because it's hard, but, you know, you can squeeze it a little bit. If you squeeze it, it actually makes a little voltage across it. And if you expand it, it makes the opposite voltage. So if you were to take and you were to thunk a piece of quartz crystal and you had a couple of, you know, plates on the sides of that crystal and they went to, you know, an amplifier, you could measure the voltage and it would go, you know, it would make an oscillation that you could see there. And as long as your measurement device was very, very high impedance, so it wasn't, taking energy from this oscillation, that oscillation would go for quite a long time because that quartz crystal is what we call high Q. It's very like a super ball, you know, very bouncy, you know. And so that oscillation will last a long time. And quartz crystals are things that you can make, you know, precise. They're kind of like, they're nice little cubic things or whatever, you know, their structure is. You can make them into nice little things. I make diamonds and stuff like that, you know. They look really very uniform and so on. So you can make a quartz crystal just the right size so it mechanically vibrates at, say, 1 megahertz, which is, you know, kind of cool. And so they actually use that. They will make you can order crystals and they'll cut to different frequencies. And, you know, those crystals are useful because they can couple to electrical circuits, right? So you can use that as your oscillator kind of element. And they use those in computers and other things because they're very accurate as to the frequency they're going to oscillate on. It's not like, you know, it might oscillate a couple, you know, couple hertz off. It's going to be right on, you know, very, very right on. How do they give it the thunk? Well, it works both ways. If you take the voltage, okay, and if you put a voltage across the quartz crystal, it will shrink or expand. So, you know, it's kind of both ways. You know, if you thunk it, it will bounce back and forth. Or if you put a voltage on it, it will shrink or expand. So they use those for like watches and computer chips and things.
How do they keep it from stopping and that for a while, or they just kind of stick
out? It's kind of the same way. You know, you have the same question on a regular mechanical oscillator. Like, say, you know, you're pushing your kid's sister in the swing. How do you keep? How does she keep from stopping? Well, you stop. She starts saying, "Hey, push me!" Right? And so you have a little bit of a, you know, an amplifier on there which has positive feedback, which, you know, keeps the thing going. But the thing that's very important is that you have something that's a very high Q, or, you know, it oscillates right at this one frequency. And that means, so when it's high Q, it also means it's low losses. Because you can imagine if you were pushing your kid's sister through a vat of honey, right? you're not going to have the same kind of period. Or, you could push her either this fast or you could push her that fast, right? Going through the vat of honey. And the swing is not going to set the speed. It's because the vat of honey kind of, that losses kind of made the thing so that it would work at kind of any old frequency, whatever you push at. Whereas if you have a very well-oiled swing with the hinges very nicely oiled and not a lot of air resistance or whatnot, then, you can use that. They use that for clocks, for pendulums. They set the clock that way. And, in the clock, there's a little thing that pushes every so often, and keeps the pendulum swinging. So, yeah, we have waves, right? Okay, so, let's see. What other kinds of things do you use in an electronic design? I don't know. Those are kind of the most common ones anyway, right? So you can kind of see that you've got some stuff here and some stuff here. Now, maybe I should say there are you could look at this limitations, or maybe I should call this, I called it limitations, but, this makes one have an advantage over the other, right? And there are some advantages over here in the IC world, which, since we've been kind of over here, we kind of understand what the disadvantages are over here, but what are the advantages over here that you get that you didn't have over here? Well, first of all, you can put a lot of stuff on an IC, a lot of circuitry, as long as, you're using lots of transistors and so on, and it's not going to use up as much room, okay? Because each little part doesn't need its own separate package, right? The transistor inside the J310 may not be very big, but the, little piece of plastic around it and the leads coming out and all that kind of stuff, it all adds up, right? And all that kind of stuff, the circuit traces that have to go there, it's going to be using up much more room on a circuit board than an integrated circuit. So that's the first advantage. So you can start making more complex and bigger circuits. The next advantage, so maybe I should say advantages here. I don't know. So over here, advantages are large number of components. Here it's small. And then the next advantage you get from integrated circuits are that your components end up being matched, more matched than you'd ever get over here for discretes, unless you start taking them to the curve tracer and trying to match them. Okay, in fact, for some amplifiers, they have kind of a symmetrical kind of a deal. Like say, there's a thing called a push-pull amplifier, and one transistor amplifies the positive half of the cycle, and the other transistor amplifies the negative half of the cycle. And if you want to make one of those kind of amplifiers that's going to have a nice high fidelity kind of a thing, you want the transistor doing the positive half to be the same as the transistor doing the negative half. And so, for example, or tubes, if you're doing tubes, if it's a high power amplifier. So you can actually buy matched pairs. But you will pay like about twice as much for a matched pair as you will for just two transistors or two tubes, because somebody had to go through there and try and find two that matched, right? And then the other ones were the oddballs, right? And so the oddballs, well, they're kind of like the rejects from the matching process, so they're cheap. So you get matched components. And you can kind of see why that occurs, because, you see, it's kind of like what I called it, like the cookie thing, right? When you bake cookies, if you put them in the oven and they're all burned, or one's burned, they're probably all burned, right? And they're probably all similar. Or if they're all, not quite done, then they're all not quite done. So whatever process one tiny piece of the integrated circuit went through, the other parts went through, and it's a very small little device, right? So it's not likely that, you know, there's a lot of difference between what one piece experienced and the other piece experienced. So the transistors are matched. So, you get matched components. Okay, so matched components over here, you got to work to get matched components. And then another advantage kind of goes with the matched components. And it's very important in especially BJT circuits. And FETs don't have quite as bad a situation this way. There's a thing that BJTs do that is really annoying, okay? And the thing is this, it's called thermal runaway. So what happens when you hook up a BJT transistor and you're dissipating power in that transistor? As you dissipate power in the transistor, it gets hotter, right? And what happens in a BJT transistor when it gets hotter, the beta goes up. If the beta goes up, probably the current goes up, right? And if the current goes up, voltage times current is power, so the power probably went up, right? Well, so it starts getting hotter again, right? And now you got this vicious positive feedback cycle, and it goes into what they call thermal runaway, and it just plain burns up. In fact, you can have two transistors in parallel, and what will happen if they're discretes? You put two transistors in parallel and you're trying to drive them, you think, well, I can get twice as much. I put two transistors in parallel. It's going to, give me twice the current. Everything's going to be great. But with BJTs, you can't do that. And the reason you can't do that, at least in discretes, is this. If you do that, what will happen is one of the transistors will go into thermal runaway and burn up. And then the other transistor left there to hold everything, he burns up too. But you see, one of them starts hogging the current, right? And that makes him hotter. He hogs more of the current, just keeps going, right? So it's a problem with BJTs. So the thing about it being an integrated circuit is the temperature on one transistor will be the same as the temperature on the other one, pretty close, right? Because they're physically coupled together, and the heat, transfers from one to the other.
Would you actually use BJT transistors in
integrated circuits? You can use BJT transistors in integrated circuits, but I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen anybody put them in parallel. If you want the equivalent of a parallel BJT transistor in an integrated circuit, you just make a bigger transistor. That's the advantage. If you're making the integrated circuits, you have some advantages. You can design the transistor the way you want it. You don't pick one, you just build one, right? So that's also an advantage, but maybe a disadvantage too, because you've got to build it, right? But we have matched temperature. Okay, so those are the differences between integrated circuits and discrete designs. Nowadays, there's very few designs that go up that are just discretes. When I was a kid, there was probably very few designs that had integrated circuits, but nowadays it's the other way around. And so We thrive on complexity. So that's kind of what happens here. So let's look at how we might do a current source in an integrated circuit situation. And why am I looking at current sources anyway? Maybe we should talk about that. I mean, in discretes, we've been using this four resistor bias network or resistors to bias things. Why do we use that? Well, the reason we do it is because it takes less transistors, which probably takes less board space, right? And resistors have traditionally been cheaper than transistors, okay? And so we just kind of use resistors because they work okay, and they're... Yeah, right. I mean, they're cheap, and they're And, you know, they're two-terminal devices, whereas the transistor is a three-terminal device, and so on, right? So, we don't want to do that in an IC design, and the reason we don't want to do that is because resistors take up a tremendous amount more room than a transistor, okay? A transistor is small, a resistor is like, you know, if you look on an IC, a resistor is, you know, three-quarters of the IC, and the transistor is a tiny little thing over in the corner, right? So if we could make a current source, we'd be better than using using resistors. Like four resistors would be, a killer kind of thing for an IC. Not a good idea. But you can have four transistors and there's no problem. And so, one thing that that they often do in ICs is they will have a number of different stages of amplifiers. The reason they have a number of different stages is because they can use lots of transistors, right? And you'd like to have, you're making an op amp, you'd like to have a lot of gain. And you guys know a lot of gain makes everything work better in an op amp, right? So you want lots of stages. So what that means is you're going to have a whole bunch of current sources, right? One for each stage. And a current source needs a reference. I mean, when we did a current source, our traditional current source, remember, you know, it looked like this. We had this resistor here, and then we put two diodes. Right, this is my favorite current source right here. I guess you guys are kind of catching on to that by now. And then we have the load here, right? But this thing right here was a voltage reference, which we use to set the current, right? I mean, and when you're doing an IC, you can make multiple of these. So if I move this guy over here, you could do like this, put another one through here like this, and this could be a different amount of current. You just set it with your resistor down here, you know, this resistor being different from that one, and now you've got two current sources, right? And you didn't have to duplicate this part. Right? So that's one thing that we do on ICs to try and make them better. Now, I don't think I've ever seen people doing this kind of thing on an integrated circuit. And the reason is probably this big resistor over here. I mean, if you make this a small resistor, I mean, you could do that. But then what's happening, you're dissipating a lot of power in this thing that's really kind of useless to dissipate a lot of power in, right? So, I don't know. I haven't seen this current source used in ICs, but it works a whole lot better if you try and use this other kind of current source in discretes. You'll be noticing thermal runaway, okay? Unless it's a very small current you're making current source for, so the transistor just plain doesn't get hot. So there's a thing called a current mirror, and it looks kind of like this. I'm trying to make these transistors look like they're mirrored here. Loads here. And I'll just put this thing down to ground. That thing goes to ground. And I need a way to get some base current in here, so I'm going to run that right up to there. Now, the thing about these two transistors is that if I call this guy Q1 and this guy Q2, this VBE1 equals this VBE2, right?
Yep.
And IB1 is equal to some IB0 times E to the Q VBE1 over NKT, right? And I'm assuming it's forward biased here. I'm ignoring the -1 and the Shockley diode equation. And IB2 is similarly e to the q VBE2 over NKT. And if VBE1 and VBE2 are the same because they're in parallel, then IB1 is the same as IB2, right? Okay, so this implies that IB1 equals IB2. And if IB1 equals IB2, and these guys are both, in the active region, then you should have IC1 equals IC2, right? And this guy right here is, he's right on the border between active and saturation, but he isn't saturated yet, right? So this guy's active, that guy's active, and so, this guy here implies that IC1 equals IC2. Here's IC1, and this is IC2, and maybe I'll write my IB2 here and my IB1 here. And so you can kind of see how this works here. Now, if this is VCC up here, if you want to set the IC1 is set by this resistor R here, right? So it equals VCC minus 0.7 over R, right? So you set the R and that sets the IC1, right? And when you set IC1, it sets IC2. And you can extend this on the same way you extended this one by putting multiple things over here. But if you do that, they will all be the same current. Whereas this guy right here, you could change him by changing your REs here, right? So this thing is called a current mirror. And I didn't do an exact analysis on this because really this IC1 has got to supply both the IB1 and the IB2 in there too, right? So this current here isn't I guess you can work it out, but it's approximately, this is approximately right. That's basically the idea here. Now, there are some issues with this. Like the first issue is, of course, don't ever do this with discretes because you'll end up with one of these two transistors will go into thermal runaway. And your source won't work. I think Larry did that last year for one of the labs. He had them design current mirrors. And of course, Larry's probably done more IC kind of stuff than other things, discretes. And so you just think, well, current mirror is something you need to know about. So they made them and they all didn't work. Well, if you let them, yeah, right. But even before they burn out, what happens is one of these guys starts hogging the current, right? The temperature changes here on this one. And they're not thermally coupled together because they're discretes, right? So the temperature, if the temperature goes up here, what's going to happen here? I think the beta goes up is the real issue. This temperature, what happens in this thing is the temperature goes up. If the temperature goes up and VBE is the same, so that's E to a smaller number, right? So this current goes down, right? So that would actually help. But the problem is that the beta changes. So anyway, one transistor, you know, starts hogging the current, and once it's hogging the current, then of course it's not going to be, you don't have this balance here anymore, right? And furthermore, the current just keeps increasing as time goes on. So that's not what you want. The second disadvantage of this is this resistor R is pretty big here. I mean, can be pretty big. There's only one R in the circuit, though. That's an advantage over this. There's three here, or two here, where this is one over here. But this guy right here might have to be a pretty big resistor. And a big resistor is going to use up IC space, right? So a guy named Widlar came up with a quick and dirty way of fixing that. And I guess we're about out of time here now, but next day we'll show you how he did that. Basically, what he did was he just stuck a resistor in, like over here, between the emitter and ground. And that cuts down the current. I mean, especially, resistor isn't very big if you have a very large IC, but it is big if you need a very small IC, right? So next day we'll look at that, and then we'll look at another problem it has and another fix. Here it is. It's D633 and D658. No problem. Feedback test. 11. They didn't have teacher.